Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I told you about an apple a day could keep heart disease away. Well, what will two apples a day do? I'll share that with you in a few moments. Also, when you're heating food, you're creating chemicals. Well, there's new research showing what that will do to your body weight and susceptibility to diabetes. Spirituality is linked to better mental health. You've heard me say that I don't believe that with those who are actually planning to have children, that they should do so for at least 1 to 2 years of preparing themselves physically, emotionally, and spiritually for that process. Because it takes that long just to detoxify the body, less than the chances of the 33% miscarriages and stillbirths. About half of all American children end up with a problem when they're born simply because the parents didn't take the time to know what they were doing. Now, there's new research out, as published in Biological Psychiatry, showing that an anxious or stressed father may pass psychological disorders on to their female offspring. How's that possible? We'll talk about it. Today, from our environment, Wall Street's frightening and predatory land grab in Africa. We'll deal with that. And also today, we're going to take a look at some commentaries. I won't have a guest. Instead, I'm going to talk about America in decline, the type of story that I see, and yet we're in complete denial of, the soul-crushing despair of lowered expectations from economic collapse. Time permitting, from Chris Hedges, The War in the Shadows, from Truthdig.com. Becoming a Third World Country, by John Michael Greer, from Archdruid Report. I won't be able to get to all this because I also intend to take your calls today, and I will be continuing with understanding spiritual materialism. Now, that's a big issue for a lot of people, and that's a part of our Understanding Human Nature series. This is my own original work. Also, coming up on our Monday evening, 7 p.m. Progressive Commentary Hour, the program many of you have asked for. This is going to be a special broadcast on government military geoengineering projects, chemtrails, weather and solar modifications. I'll be having Dane Wingington, a geoengineering scientist who worked on the first commercial solar electric facility in the United States and has been at the forefront of investigating government chemtrail and geoengineering projects, especially stratospheric aerosol geoengineering and solar radiation management. And his independent research has confirmed the serious health and environmental impacts of geoengineering's toxic compositions. He is the go-to expert in the world on this, and he's also in Michael Murphy's new documentary, What in the World Are They Spraying? So I'll have him on. Also, Rosalind Peterson is California president, co-founder of the Agriculture Defense Coalition, which is a public interest organization devoted to protecting agricultural crop production and environmental preservation from uncontrolled experimental weather modification programs and atmospheric heating and testing programs and ocean and atmospheric experimental geoengineering programs. Needless to say, as all of our progressive commentaries ours are, this will be scholarly but informative at the lay level. It will all be backed up, and we'll have the finest experts on the issue. Let's begin. You can get easily 2 to 4 apples a day, is what I'm recommending, into your diet by juicing them. Now, if you really want to do something good, you can peel the apples because most of the healing benefit of an apple is in the skin. There are various kinds, Macintosh and Roman apples, Empire apples, Granny Smith, and each one imparts a different set of phytochemicals, phytonutrients, polyphenolic acids. Peel them. Throw them into a blender. Now, the rest of the apple you can juice and set aside, or you can do a lot with it, but it's the skin. Here's the latest on this. and this is from Florida State University and published in the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics Journal. 2 apples a day cut heart disease risk in women. Quote, scientists found that apples significantly lowered blood fat levels in postmenopausal women, the group which is most at risk for heart attacks and strokes. Snacking on the fruit every day for 6 months slashed cholesterol by almost 25%. The biggest reduction was seen in low-density lipoprotein, the so-called bad cholesterol, that furs up around arteries and raises the risk of life-threatening clots if to the brain or the heart. The findings by a team of researchers at Florida State University supports previous evidence that apples could be good for the heart, but also suggests that they could also benefit one of the highest risk groups. So, one more reason to have our apples every single day. Now, something we should not have each day is fructose, especially modified fructose from corn. Here's one of the reasons why, and this is from Natural News, Les Smucker, and is published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It says this: fructose promotes hormonal imbalance and weight gain. I'll quote this. Fructose is the sugar in fruit, vegetables, grains, and honey. It is also used as a popular sweetener in prepared foods, including, and perhaps especially in soft drinks, in the form of high fructose corn syrup. According to an article in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, high fructose corn syrup makes up 40% of caloric sweeteners added to our food, possibly because it is inexpensive and appeals to consumers who love the taste. Dramatic increases in obesity correspond closely to the introduction and growing use of high fructose corn syrup, suggesting it has played a role in this epidemic. And then it goes on to talk about what the research found, and it shows how bad it is for the brain. That was done at Oregon Health and Science University. It's stored as fat, and it impacts your fat-regulating hormones. That was from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. So how about this? Simply give it all up. You do not get the same impact when you eat fruit. The amount of naturally occurring fructose and the enzymes to support its metabolism are completely different from the high fructose corn syrup concentrates that are very processed and denatured and have no value whatsoever. Now, something else that we must pay attention to. I received a note on my desk the other day from a listener who said that there was a, I don't know which magazine it is, that had a picture of all the movie stars, the male movie stars from the 1980s and 90s, and how they look today. Don Johnson, Harrison Ford, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and who else they had? Nick Nolte, Robert Redford, and Richard Gere. And he said a couple of them look all right, like Richard Gere, but all the rest of them just look ancient. And how is this possible? Well, having counseled at least, I'm going to guess, 2,000 to 3,000 current celebrities or famous people, including probably 500 old-time celebrities, those who many are dead now, like Gloria Swanson and Hedley Lamarr and Myrna Loy and some who didn't take my advice at all, Marlon Brando, Orson Welles. They weren't interested, but others were and lived a longer life because of it, including Celeste Holmes recently and Greta Garbo. Like, I saw a coming attraction for Anna Karina, her famous film, and how it's being redone. And people forget, what happens to someone who's retired? And 10, 20, 30 years, they're retired. They're forgotten. Unless you see one of their old films, but you forget. They just have to go through life every day also. It's just they reprioritize their lives. And they have health issues. When they have health issues, you know, they want some health. And those who wanted a more natural approach would reach out to me. Now, all the names I just mentioned had no problem letting people know I counseled them and would frequently come in Like Gloria Swanson came on the radio a lot when I was on WMCA, as did Hedley Lamar and all the others who've never chosen to go public. I keep them in total confidence, including many today are Academy Award winners. And here's the difference. Let's say that you wake up today and you decide for breakfast you're going to have a bagel, lox, or smoked salmon with coffee and sugar, or maybe bacon and eggs, or maybe a sugar-coated cereal, or maybe toast with butter, jam, and coffee. Now, those are going to be, for most people, the majority of types of breakfast people have. For lunch or dinner, they will have some form of salad. They'll have an animal protein, chicken or fish, or beef or pork. And they'll generally have a little bit of vegetables. And more often than not, they'll have some form of alcoholic beverage, either beer or wine. The wine will have sulfites in it, which is extremely dangerous. And, of course, the alcohol content. Each time they drink or eat anything that is not improving their health, it's denaturing their health. Because the byproducts of the food themselves, pesticides, growth-stimulating hormones, allergens, all are negative to the body. On top of that is, how was the food prepared? Was it deep fried? Was it broiled, baked? Was it cooked at a high temperature? All that will create byproducts. And those byproducts then attack the body's cells and create inflammatory cytokines and other agents, which increase the amount of free radicals, and that destroys the DNA. Now combine the two together. You're not only eating bad food, but you're eating bad food prepared even worse for the body, a double negative. Then it's triple negative. You have a cold alcoholic beverage with it that disrupts digestion completely and creates a highly acidic system. Then let's throw another negative in. You're overeating. You're eating calories the body cannot process, toxins the body cannot remove, heavy metals that are going to be stored in your brain and your liver and your kidneys. And then let's throw in medications that are going to take away some of the vitamins and minerals you need in the body, like statins destroy coenzyme Q10. And then when you're really thirsty, instead of having something the body needs, healthy, clean water, you're taking coffee or beverage, further exacerbating the problem. And then one day you wake up and you look in the mirror and you look like Jean-Claude Van Damme or Harrison Ford. That's what you look like. Starting in the spring, but not before, my schedule doesn't permit it, I intend to take 100 people from the United States around the country and put them on an excessively accelerated anti-aging protocol. All their medical workups, photographs, biochemistry, before, during, and at the completion of 1 year. And I'm hopeful to have someone like someone who's just, you know, at the end of it now, Burt Reynolds. And when you wonder, why are these people the way they are today, why they look the way they do, and that's aside from, you know, Mickey Rourke with the worst plastic surgery a mad person could imagine, what's happening at the biochemical level? Can we reverse that? Can we take a guy who's 59 and make him 39 biochemically? Can we improve a person's physical appearance? The answer is yes. But standing between can we do it and will they do it is a whole lot of values and belief systems that have to be changed. My hope is that we'll have enough people recognizable to the American public that if we help them change and people see how dramatic the changes are without any cosmetic surgery or makeup or any of that nonsense, but a real biochemical makeover, then that might shift more people's attitudes about, gee whiz, you mean that's what I got to look forward to when I hit 40, 50, 60, 70? No, it's not what you have to look forward to, but it's absolutely going to be what you're going to look like and feel like if you keep doing what you've done. This is the latest to add to this. This is from the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. published in our most respected scientific journal in America, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Here's what it says. Toxic byproduct of heat-produced food may cause increased body weight and diabetes, insulin resistance, and type 2 diabetes. And here's what it says. That, quote, this was a prolonged but rewarding study showing that a specific age compound abundant in foods within only a few generations in mouse terms contributes to the increase in weight gain, insulin resistance, diabetes, and that also could be attributable to humans because they're looking at what happens when you cook food. And when you cook food, you change the chemicals in food. Microwaving is the worst you can do. So what happens then if you do just the opposite? What happens if you go on a living food, high raw food juicing diet? Then you give the cells everything it needs to repair the damage. And then fortify with different supplements, homeopathy, the zeolites, and all the other stuff we know. You can actually reverse the aging process. I mean, really reverse it. Next up, spirituality is linked to a better mental health. This is according to the Journal of Religion and Health. Quote, according to a study conducted by researchers at the University of Missouri, spirituality often improves health regardless of a person's health. The team highlight that healthcare providers could tailor treatments and rehabilitation programs to accommodate an individual's spiritual inclinations. Quote, in many ways, the results of our study support the idea that spirituality functions as a personality trait. With increased spirituality, people can reduce their sense of self and feel a greater sense of oneness and connectedness with the rest of the universe. What was interesting was that frequency of participation in religious activities or the perceived degree of congregational support was not found to be significant in the relationship between personality, spirituality, religion, and health. Now, what does this mean in lay language? How many times when you are relating to people in your family or friends or relationship, the only thing that matters in the discussion is how the other person feels? Not what they think, but how they feel. And everything gets twisted into a contortionist feedback loop that you said something that made me feel bad. You did something that made me feel bad. And never does a person realize that nothing you're doing or saying is going to make a person feel bad. They can either like it or not like it, but all they're doing is overreacting to long ago conditioned tapes that just kick in. So it means that when you're with these people, it's not, are they going to overreact in a negative way and self-sabotage and say inappropriate things, do inappropriate things? The answer is yes. And they will seemingly have no control over these impulsive outbursts. It's because it's already predetermined on their tapes. That's where mindful meditation, where you're able just to put yourself in a beautiful environment and just meditate, stay focused, even if it's doing something simple like gardening and planting flowers. Anything that takes you away from focusing on how you feel. I think how we feel and making people try to feel better about themselves is one of the most counterintuitive and destructive things we can do, because then everything is predicated upon I'm saying the right things and doing the right things so you will feel the right things. That's just a dance of deception. A person who is really growing does not need to have a feedback loop off everyone in their existence to determine, should I feel good about myself? If that was the case with me, I would have to take a look at everything I do for other people who don't give a thank you in return. I just got a letter today from a homeless veteran's food kitchen in Florida that I just sent the entire proceeds of a check that I earned from a lecture last week, and I gave them the whole check. I just had it made out to them. Now, had they not sent a thank you, it would not have stopped me from sending the next check, nor would it have stopped me from appreciating what it means to be the real victims. I'm not the victim for not having someone appreciate my generosity or kindness or benevolence. I feel blessed in grace that I can help someone. I don't need that feedback loop. Because if you need it, then what happens when you don't get it? Then you feel bad about yourself. You feel bad about it and you start judging other people. So then you become codependent. So what you're really saying is I'm really insecure, and the only reason I'm doing something is because you and the feedback you give me make me feel more secure. Hence the AA meetings and then, you know, we're all addicts. No, we're not. We're all dysfunctional. No, we're not. We're all incapable of making right decisions unless we have a leash tied tightly around us or we'll go off, you know, the deep end. No, we won't. These are all choices of free will. But to do that free will choice in a positive way, you have to at least get conscious long enough to stay in the moment and say, what do I want the outcome of this moment to be? If the object of the exercise was to help hungry people who will not have a meal tonight, who will be living alone in bad conditions in the Everglades or in the woods of Florida, then I have to think only of their interest, not the feedback loop. I disconnect from the emotional outcome. Now, you may think that is cold. It is not. It is only when you have a heart that is warm and compassionate and sensitive and feeling that you can disconnect from your own need for the feedback. Yet we have warped and distorted. We have so pervasively manipulated ourselves and society into thinking that the only value we get is the quid pro quo in return. Well, then where is this selfless act appreciated? Then there are no selfless acts. There's only a selfish act. And hence, you might as well spend the rest of your life being with everyone else who chooses to be dysfunctional and stand up and say, my name is Bob, I'm 2.5 years. No, this is just one big damn game we're playing. Give from the heart. Touch the heart. And you can help the consciousness. But you've got to be conscious. And for that, you have to get yourself out of how you feel about everything that is said and done. If someone says something that you don't like, why should you take it personally? Because more often than not, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the other person and their projections, perceptions. If they're not willing to alter their perceptions to see things in their correct context, why should you feel that you now must be Saint Sebastian and taking arrows and suffering through the redemption of your ability to absorb pain? This is just a masochistic, foolish notion. So the next time you think about having a kid, remember, everything you perceive, you become. So an anxious father, a stressed father, that vibration, according to biological psychiatry, is going to go right through into the developing fetus. Evidently, they're saying, quote, the sperm cells change. Yeah. And now they're recognizing something that Bruce Lipton, who is really deserves the credit for this, has known all along, the epigenetics. We are what we think. So then be aware of what you think. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to share the ideas on issues that make a difference in our lives, trying to do it from a different perspective. Before we go further, I want to share something. It was maybe 2 years ago, I saw a photograph, and then I did more research on it. Having raised chimpanzees, the original Kokomo Jr. that used to appear on the Dave Garraway Show on NBC, and having worked with her day in and day out so she could actually communicate, not just understand over 167 different verbal commands, but actually the bonding, the eye-to-eye contact, seeing what she could perceive, seeing what her emotional connections were. I've seen this in all other kinds of wonderful creatures, meaning there is a spiritual value that we're all connected to. And if you can be spiritually connected to your dog and cat, and I know you have that, then why would you assume that a cow or a pig or a duck or a chicken should be any different? They aren't. This then is the journey of the elder matriarch of a chimpanzee family who died at about 45 years of age. And the only time I've ever seen this is all of the chimpanzees of all ages stood for a long period of time in total silence and didn't move as the caregiver put her body in a wheelbarrow and brought her out to where she was to be buried. Now, when you understand that chimpanzees and adults and babies are never all that quiet, yet they were, then you understand that they were paying homage to her final journey. I think I still have that up on my... I'm pretty sure I still have that up on my website. Very moving. Then there is this, and I put this up there. I want you to see this. This is the elephant's journey to pay their final respects. You may or may not have heard of a man named Lawrence Anthony, but everyone in South Africa knows him. He authored three books, including the bestseller, The Elephant Whisperer. And what he did is he would go all over Africa and he would rescue animals. And specifically, he rescued orphaned elephants and hurt and injured elephants and nursed them back to health. And he also was the one who rescued the animals out of the Baghdad Zoo during the 2003 invasion. Well, he died this year. He died in the spring. Now, what was interesting is what happened next. 2 days after he died, this large group of wild elephants showed up at his home, and they were led by two large matriarchs. Mind you, there were multiple wild herds, meaning the herds came from different parts in the country. They weren't associated. They weren't from the same family. You almost never see this. A total of 31 elephants walked to his home. Long journey, and they stood outside of his home. Imagine that. Think of the supreme intelligence. Think of the timing. They were there to say goodbye. And yet these are the creatures that we relegate to zoos and assume that they do not have a higher consciousness. They do. Now to our commentary. Picking up where I left off yesterday, trying to understand how we can bridge the gap between senior citizens, what we call our greatest generation, my mother and father and aunts and uncles and yours as well, our generation, the baby boomers, those from 47 to 65 years of age, and there are 92 million of us, and the X generation, our children in their 30s and 40s, and then their children in their teens and 20s. The Y generation. And there seems to be so little understanding of where we all belong today and how we can cooperate and how in the midst of all these challenges so many people are having, we can rejuvenate, renew ourselves, and start over. And hence I've written a series of commentaries that I believe are important for our time. I talked yesterday about how the people who really shaped our educational system, the founder of the social efficiency movement, Frederick Winslow Taylor, in the 1910s and teens, replaced with a single goal that children should be human resources only. And there will be two types of children, those who should have an advanced education and those who should be the worker bees and do all the other work. What I didn't have a chance to mention because of a limitation of time was that we might remember that there was a single fear that utterly petrified the industrial moguls like the Carnegies and Rockefellers and the Mellons and the Fisks and the Gould and the Rothschilds. Then, and what absolutely terrifies the industrial leaders heading banks and foundations and think tanks and corporate America and governmental agencies today. And that's why you have the Homeland Security Act and the Patriot Act. It's not because we're afraid of terrorists coming here from Afghanistan or someplace. That has nothing to do with it. The reality is, and the same is happening in Greece and Spain, in Portugal and Ireland, in Italy and in England, in Czechoslovakia, the corporate leaders then and the corporate leaders today feel threatened by the workers revolting and toppling their positions of power and control over vast wealth and influence, as they had witnessed historically with the Bolshevik Revolution in Tsarist Russia and the rise of unions in industrialized Europe. For this reason, the American power elite during the early 20th century needed to reshape all American institutions, our education, our medical, our universities, our management, etc., to assure that the population was isolated from independent, free-thinking influences in order to prevent their imaginations from entertaining higher ideals and visions that might threaten the dominant social paradigm. Few Americans know that the current mass public education system that we have today was originally adopted from a model developed in Prussia, which had been proved to produce bored, mediocre minds who would surrender themselves to their allotted space and place in society without challenging authority. The result has been that every generation has since removed another nutrient from public education until today we have Wonder Bread schools, colorless, bland, tasteless, and void of any authentic nutritional value for human consumption whatsoever. Now, my generation has succeeded in further dumbing down education by making standardized testing a reductionist science. And perhaps unbeknownst to us, it has been a superb tactic ensuring that the fire of passion and imagination is finally extinguished in our children, replacing the earlier principle of identifying each student's unique talents and developing them to a higher and more inspired level. Standardized testing is doing little more than providing students with the bare essentials, equivalent to teaching every child how to go to the bathroom, to brush their teeth on their own. The result is a generation now in their 20s and 30s who are extremely intelligent, able to recognize the lies and hypocrisies of our corporate political America, and that of all its many institutions, including the faith communities, they have been betrayed. However, instead of possessing ideals to carry society to a higher level of realization, deconstructing all the existing faux institutions, most are spiritually adrift and extremely distrustful of everyone except a close circle of friends, and worse, because their imaginations have been severely repressed as children, both at home and in school. They are a generation wandering in a desert without any authentic vision of a life other than competing for money, dominance, and indulging in ceaseless entertainment. And what happens when maturing youth lack the imagination to create a noble ideal to strive for? They expect entitlements and rewards for simply inhabiting a body and being in a culture that has lost its ethical bearings and whose only purpose is endless consumption. So, where then should we look for the solutions? I believe the solution rests in differentiating religious and spiritual materialisms. With all of my discussion about the limits of our society's overindulgence in consumerism and competition, and the loss of deeper spiritual values associated with nurturing the wisdom found in our inner lives, you might say, well, Gary, wait a minute. America's the most religious nation in the world. Yeah, surveys by respectable research groups like the Pew Charitable Trust and the Barna Research Group estimates that 86% of American citizens report their affiliation with a religious faith, whether orthodox, traditional, or unconventional. So how can you say there is a substantial loss of spiritual values in America today? My answer is quite simple. Adhering to a belief system is not the same as living with the deeper awareness about the essential meaning of that belief's values in one's life. A belief system is such that it's simply a system. It is a system that stands alongside or in opposition to other systems. And history shows that all systems change. And since systems are edifices of human imagination, all systems are impermanent. If Christians in the 21st century would transport themselves to the origins of Christianity in Palestine 2,000 years ago, they would likely not fully relate to the faith practice at that time. Therefore, it is important to realize that belief systems, although powerful and capable of exerting great influence over a society, are still, by definition, subject to change. nor does a religious system necessarily impart universal values upon its members. For example, there are many devout Christians, Jews, and Muslims in America and around the world, thoroughly devoted to their respective belief systems, who are eager to bomb each other off the face of the planet. Some of today's faith communities have become places of refuge for many boomers, as well as for members of other generations who have arrived at the realization that the domineering edifices of American society in politics, finance, business, healthcare, education are impersonal and unsupportive of community building today. The surge into more orthodox religions, and particularly evangelical Christianity, is not necessarily about a person's personal desire to embark upon a path of self-discovery, as much as it is about finding human acceptance and a sense of community in a culture that has turned cold and has left its citizens to fend for themselves. Many of my generation, with hectic lives and insufficient time to spend with their children and families, have recognized this need. But instead of taking it upon themselves to make the necessary lifestyle changes to accommodate other family members, they have found faith communities to be the answer to their needs and prayers. Conventional religion is not the only major expression of faith in American culture that my generation has participated in. There's also an alternative belief system that has grown into citizens' lives via mass media and popular self-empowerment gurus, which falls under the umbrella term of the New Age, or spirituality. Do you remember the book called The Secret that Oprah made the best-selling book in America, and in a subsequent film? To me, it is indicative of a pervasive outlook that is particularly strong among my generation. The essential premise of The Secret is that if we put our positive ideas into the universe will manifest it for our benefit and happiness. The ethical, moral, and spiritual motivations behind what you project with your thought is of no consequence. It is inconsequential. The so-called secret is there is a law of attraction intrinsic in the human being and the universe, and if we learn to manipulate this law, we can possess all of those things that at one time were identified with the ideal American dream. Well, boo-hoo to that. There are substantial faults with this idiocy. First, there is no new secret to this philosophy because it has been common sense in spiritual traditions since time immemorial. Second, there is nothing spiritual about this secret because it is simply repackaging a principle and true wisdom. Finally, the secret makes a fundamental error of ignoring a more essential spiritual need for making dramatic changes in people's lives, which can only be achieved by healthy motivation, commitment, discipline, and effort. Simply using our positive thoughts to attract a soulmate or a BMW or a new home or a better job will never instigate the necessary lifestyle changes people must make to live more enlightened and fulfilling lives. What is most important for our investigation of different cultures is not the secret philosophy by which such a book and film have captured the imagination of so many citizens and so many wannabe books and films after that. In the 1970s, the Tibetan Buddhist teacher Trungpa wrote a book called Cutting Through the Spiritual Materialisms, which was remarkably prophetic about the religious and spiritual landscape we are now experiencing during this time of our lives. The basic criticism of the way Westerners approach spirituality is that they refuse to let go of their ego clinging when trying to develop themselves psychologically and spiritually. They meditate with an ego intention, such as, I gotta get there. But the I is only the ego talking to itself. The ego is only an impermanent, conditioned entity without any independent existence. And while we might imagine that the ego can achieve happiness and peace, it is in fact shutting us off from ultimately reaching a place that is essential and real. Once we realize we are guided by our higher selves, our insights will change. We realize that nothing is permanent. Material things come and go because life is fluid. The trouble has been that almost all of today's postmodern belief systems would have us believe in permanency. In truth, everything, including our egos, change all the time. Today's pseudo-spirituality that is confined to a Channel 13 special is the gratification of the ego. whether it's The Secret or some Deepak latest book or Andrew Weil latest book or some movement or Tony Robbins' latest jabbering, it's all an outgrowth of our need to find a quick fix, a spiritual bypass, as it were, to avoid having to commit to the hard work of authentically transforming ourselves. It is my personal opinion that this represents a desperate effort to find spiritual meaning in a society that has become overwhelmingly reductionistic and denies the importance of vital spiritual values and the need to live by them to produce constructive positive change. Although the basic principle behind the law of attraction is valid, I would suggest raising it to a higher level instead of the Mercedes or I need the right relationship and more possessions that are impermanent. Think of enduring universal qualities that you want to experience in your life. For example, if you focus on the quality of beauty, you will witness beauty where you never saw it before. You will even see beauty transpire through people who don't obviously exhibit beauty in their lives. If you think of solace and peace, you will feel quietude even when walking through the hustle of a large metropolitan area. If you think happy and pleasant thoughts, you will discover yourself smiling at people you never smiled at before, and chances are you'll be rewarded with a smile in return. These are universal attributes that make our lives precious and full of excitement. While conventional religion, particularly the kind of conservative evangelicalism that continues to increase in popularity and New Age spirituality, might appear to be diametrically opposed, I want to suggest that they are more closely aligned than one might think. In fact, they are two sides of the same coin. In the forms they appear to us now, both are baby boomer generational developments, although each can trace its roots to earlier generations' religious and spiritual experiences. A major characteristic of a materialistic culture is subjugation and acquisition. Conquest has, in fact, been a defining historical trait of Western civilization. Colonialization, feudalism, manifest destinies, acquisition of territories, religious crusades to gain converts, male domination, and so on. The developed nation's embrace of globalization and free market economics has been perceived by some scholars as a postmodern expression of colonialism. The primary goal, whether it be intentional or not, is to subjugate the national interests of poor nations for the purpose of acquiring those nations' resources. The result is better profit margins for multinational corporations and developed governments. Media and corporate advertising, the pushing of drugs on television by the pharmaceutical industry, the news distortions of media's politically motivated spin doctors can all be seen as extensions of colonialism. However, it is a colonial concept far more subtle than what we have seen in the past. It concerns the colonialization of the mind. This is a colonialism that subjugates the best of our mental capacities in order to gain our emotional support to get us by a particular product. Both the religious materialism and conservative religion and the spiritual materialism of the New Age thought are based upon the principles of subjugation and acquisition. The difference is that New Age beliefs operate at the individual level, whereas moralistic religion focuses on the collective level. The New Age reinforces the ego's self-gratification by promulgating a belief that a person can subjugate the universe of one's personal desires and wants. In this sense, it is a distorted expression of the boomers' free-spirited revolt in favor of people manifesting their unique individuality in the 60s and the 70s. Conservative religion, on the other hand, does not promote the individuality of its believers ever. It is concerned with subjugating everyone, all people, to the order of collective acquirence and power of furthering its moral agenda and belief system in society and the body politic. Unlike the New Age, the conservative religion of boomers does not trace its roots to the free thinking and self-exploration of the 60s. Instead, it is a distortion of the greatest generation's community-based ethic that boomers grew up with. Neither the New Age movement nor conservative religion is an answer to the critical social and spiritual needs of the 21st century. although each has likely brought a degree of personal satisfaction to its adherents and has probably soothed anxieties and insecurities, neither can ever truly be a force for authentic spiritual change, either in individuals or collective, because both are distortions of a universal value shared by people all over the world. What is more important is what is needed today is an enlightened reinvention of positive values from our upbringing and synergizing these with their religious, spiritual idealisms and life-affirming imagination. This is the boomer renewal I envision that is most needed to transform our society today for the benefit of future generations of young people whose world will be dramatically different than the one we're living in today. In conclusion, living consciously means living spiritually, and living spiritually means paying attention to people in need. Most of us consider ourselves to be fine people. Well, are your actions fine? I can't tell you how many times I've met people who will run off for a week to meditate at some guru's feet, who will go do yoga someplace and be supplying in the movements, who will eat the raw foods and drink the juices and get the colonics, but every single waking second of their day is based upon how they feel. Now then ask them, what have you done to help other people? And the answer is nothing. But everything they do is to help themselves. Then what is the purpose of this exercise? It is merely a disguise. It is merely a diversion of authentic life. One of the largest obstacles to breaking free the chains preventing us from acting spiritually is our own selfishness. On a global scale, selfishness is manifest as multinational corporations and governments exploiting every inch of the planet. In Africa and Asia, massive poverty exists in part due to corporate intervention. Yet do we see Fortune 500 companies giving even a small portion of their revenues back to provide proper drinking water wells or sanitation or medical clinics to help with tuberculosis, housing units to help people who are otherwise being refugees? No, not a nickel. Do they invest in planting trees where they have devastated the environment through deforestation? Are they building medical facilities so local residents can combat malaria and dysentery? No. In all cases, there is no support. The heads of multinational corporations, especially including Bill Gates and others of his ilk, are respected individuals. Most are religious people who dominate large institutions and donate large sums to their churches and synagogues. Almost every one of our politicians in Washington claims some form of religious belief or affiliation, and while they may hold sincere and legitimate beliefs in their face, their actions in the public sphere rarely, if ever, demonstrate that they give a damn about anything that is truly authentic in its compassion. True decency involves helping other people and attempting to improve the lives of those who have been wronged. Swami Muktananda, a Hindu wise man from India, once said, "Expect nothing, and you will never be disappointed." The problem is people generally expect more. They expect to receive in proportion to what they give, and that is not always what happens. As an example, you may have the consciousness that allows for compassion. You may be able to listen to others and understand them, but that does not mean that those others will have the same capacity to offer compassion in return. You can't expect another person to be just like you. So don't blame others if they're unable to give you what you have given them. If you have given 90% in order to receive 10%, that's still a balanced equation if that's all the other person is capable of in return. They give what they can. There's ability levels. It's rare that we'll find someone who's able to give equally. Accept that, and you'll truly be compassionate and caring. Beginning with the reign of the Catholic Church, when it became the worldly power over Europe, material power, the power to govern and control, replaced virtually all spiritual power. It was totally devoid. In the 20th century, the 21st century, we are witnessing our world, our nation's social fabric dying. It is not simply dying from competitive greed and the exploitation and destruction of the environment. In a deeper way, it is also experiencing and expiring from people's denial of a spirit that authentically connects and unifies us all. our society will need to be healed by corporate executives, new scientific advances, and politicians. But will it? Never. Both the New Age movement, the spiritual movement, the pervasive conservative religious movement that dominate American religiosity are blinded by their own spiritual materialism, thereby fundamentally denying the dynamics and authentic spirituality. These movements are trying to heal what does not need healing, because our true and genuine spiritual selves are already whole and pure. The authentic self can only be found by developing an inner life and is the only trustworthy leader capable of expressing the wisdom that can guide and heal ourselves and others. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear from you now. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, before we take your calls, let's go over and say hello. I see that we have Dr. Roy Spicer on the line. Hi, Roy.
Hello, Gary.
Hi, Roy. I wanted to make an offer to our audience today, and as you're an environmental scientist, I wanted people to have something in case there's ever an emergency. With hurricane season on us, with people who don't know what's going to be happening in the environment, with fires galore all over the place, I just believe it's common sense and reason that we have a portable filter in case we do not have healthy potable water, so that we can have something that will filter the water, whatever we may have, and make it drinkable, hence the Gary Noll water filter, the portable one. Now, you've looked at all the science behind it, and if I talk about it, it'll be self-serving. Tell us, since we have not had a previous conversation on this, tell us about this that we're going to offer today as a fundraiser on Progressive Radio Network. Tell us what you have found and why this is important.
Well, first, Gary, the emergency filters use a ceramic filtration that is highly effective in removing parasites, bacteria, chlorine, sediment, bad taste, and odor. These are contaminants that will generally be found when there's no potable water. So when the water supply is affected by a hurricane or a flood, you're going to have disease-causing microorganisms. And the ceramic filter has been used worldwide, and this is the newer version of the ceramics, even better than the original ceramics. And they can take out bacteria as small as a cholera bacteria. That's 0.3 microns. So this has been a well-documented and tested ceramic filter. It meets NSF standard 42. It's been tested against other ceramic filters, and it far exceeds all the other ceramic filters on the market. And it's actually meets the higher standards of NSF that have just been put in place for parasites. So beyond question, this would be the type of filter you want to have when there's no potable water or you can't get bottled water. You can use any source water, lake, stream, river, bathtub water, toilet water even, to be used in creating potable water when there's no other source of water. So without question, this would be something you should have. We're going to experience a hurricane here in Florida. We used these several years ago. Up in New York last year, you had several natural disasters, and people were without water for days or weeks. So this would be the absolute best safety measure you could take to assure that you have water so you could survive.
And explain to people, just so they know what the Gary Noll emergency gravity water filter does. At first, I don't know anything out there that compares to it. It's designed for use where pressurized and suitable potable water is not available. It's a gravity filter to filter the water, and as you heard Roy say, there's an upper chamber through ceramic filters to supply clean, safe drinking water from most any water source. I travel with it. When I'm out on the road, that's what I have, and that's what I drink from. And the housing is manufactured from a high-density plastic that will not corrode and will not leach. It is extremely durable. It's lightweight. It's portable. It's self-containing. And the system can accommodate up to 5 ceramic filters to provide ample drinking water for any situation. And so that's what it is. And
it's just another point, Gary. We've supplied these to the Peace Corps, and I had a call from the medical director. They've used these on 5 islands in the Caribbean. And before they used them, most of their posts, the people there were getting diarrhea. And they told me the reason they use this, because since they've been using them, no one has had diarrhea. And that's a big issue worldwide, not only in the United States, when you have emergencies or under normal circumstances, when you can't chlorinate the water.
What if the electricity goes out with through a solar storm? What if a hurricane came like it did last year and you're out for days or weeks in Vermont, upstate New York, and the Jersey Shore? This would have been a lifesaver for people. Now, here's the deal. I'm going to offer this at a very special price, only $159, including a free extra filter. That's an extra $40 saved. I only have 100 units in stock. That's all I have. So if you want to get the Gary Null Emergency Gravity Water Filter, take it anywhere and have safe drinking water no matter where you're at. I could be in India, which I will be, by the way, and drinking the water there. Call this number. I only have 100 units, 877, and only one unit per person, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, for the everyone should have it. The Gary Null Emergency Gravity Water Filter, nothing like it. And I mean, it gets out so much that nothing else does. Thank you, Roy.
You're welcome.
For those of you who just joined us, I'm Gary Null, sharing a lot of insight and information today. And by the way, when I was talking about the elephants from all these different family of elephants coming together from the wild elephants, they all had something in common. They all knew where this man lived. They knew how to get there. They went in single file. They stayed there for a couple days and then went back into the African bush. You talk about having a spiritual connection. He did. Let's say hello. You have a few moments to call us now, so give a call at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. If you'd like to share your thoughts, comments, questions, I'd be happy to address them. But right now, the only person I have on the line to the phone start ringing here is Luann Panessi, and she reads your mail. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I hope everybody missed me. I was away for a while, but I'm here, and I'm back to reading emails. And your audience is, I've got about six people here who emailed me about this same thing about Stephen Barrett. Apparently, he went into Doctor's Data Laboratory, which does testing of heavy metals and things like that. And essentially, the whole lawsuit amounted to defamation of character, libel, conspiracy, and intentionally attempting to destroy their business. But fortunately, the tables were turned on Stephen Barrett. They sent me a couple of people sent me some of the details. And it amazes me. I mean, I think this all started back in 1976 when he tried to destroy chiropractic in America, and then they went over people. He went after people that distributed homeopathic remedies, and the only way that people could make restitution was to be paying for their harm, or paying because they were helping people with homeopathic remedies.
Luann, let me put this in perspective. Anytime you are, as a chiropractor, a massage therapist, a medical doctor, a holistic dentist, holistic nurse, and a holistic dietitian, nutritionist, anytime you're doing something that sets itself aside from the highly controlled, orthodox, and officially accepted and sanctioned healing profession, you're going to be representing a threat to them. So that you're going to be attacked. Stephen Barrett and others who have the right to attack anyone they want, I don't question that, but let them come forward and debate. I've invited him in debate repeatedly. Let them come forward and make their best arguments. But then when they finally do attack people and someone challenges them in court, and now they're in court and doctor's data's got them in court and showing all this information, and then you start saying, well, are they experts? Do they really know this? Well, you would think they were experts because they've been invited in front of Congress, the New York Times, all these papers use them as experts. Then you start finding out, well, gee whiz, didn't someone do their homework? Where do these people get their funding? And take a look at everything they've written and then go through it and see, is it honest, is it fair, is it objective? And unless you're able to do that, then you'll never know what the truth is. Well, fortunately, some individuals took Stephen Barrett's personal attacks against me, and because I debated Barrett's friend and partner out there, Dr. Victor Herbert, and he looked really bad in those debates on national television. And I don't take it personally, you know. I just share my information, they share theirs, and the public makes up their mind, whatever they want to believe. But someone looked at Barrett's attacks against me and found them all inaccurate. And to the contrary, they were not kind in their appraisal of Barrett. And so all they have to do is read that, and then the people know the truth. The trouble is, the people who need to know the truth, the New York Times and the major media, are not going to look for it. So if you expose the quack busters or other so-called experts in different fields, you're not going to be able to show what you found against them, and the major media stop using them as resources. What's important is people in this audience know that they can go and read an article now and show Gary said this or someone else said this, and the quack buster said this, and gee whiz, the quack busters were wrong. At least people will have that satisfaction in their consciousness. We're out of time. Thank you very much, Luann. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for sharing your thoughts. I look forward to sharing more on the next program. Stay tuned now for Mike Fader coming at you right now. Control your very soul.